Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, November 19th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, it's gardening once again, and we welcome back two of our favorites, gardener Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and horticulturalist Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery. They are on the line to answer your questions, and I suggest you call early. It's always a popular program, whatever the season. 800-348-2551. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you got to do is call, and they'll be here. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Greg Ward, Bob Graves, your gardening calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us on the line today to answer your gardening questions, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery. If you have a question about maybe how to get prepped for next year's planting or some stuff that you can do between now and then, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. As always, you can throw us an email to voxpop@wamc.org. We will get to as many of those as we can as well. But the number is 800-348-2551. And let's welcome our guests. Greg Ward, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Ray. How are you?
You getting ready for the Christmas season over there at Ward's Nursery?
You know, we are. We've actually created a pretty nice open space for Christmas. Of course, if you're looking for wreaths and roping and trees, it's all outside already. We Santa will not be able to come this year.
Hmm.
Are
you on the naughty list again, Greg?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Yes,
all right,
I admit it.
Well, you know, that happens with the COVID. Santa doesn't want to get the COVID either. Bob Graves of Fadigan's, how are things going over there, sir?
It's going really well. Christmas is coming quick. We got some trees and wreaths and roping and all the gifts and the house plants, and everything's ready to go, and we're still even doing a lot of landscaping because it's pretty decent weather out there.
In your estimation, what tree, what variety of Christmas tree is the longest lasting? We usually get ours on the day after Thanksgiving or maybe the Saturday after that. And Fraser fir is what we've been doing the last several years.
Yeah.
And they last pretty well. I think
that's the consensus of opinion, is that Fraser is the most long lasting. It's also the most popular by far. Now, this, you know, these things change over the decades as to what's popular, but right now it's Fraser's for sure.
Now, I'll ask Greg, and then I'll ask you as well. Has anyone actually purchased a Christmas tree yet?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Today, in fact, but I believe yesterday might have been the first day, yes.
That's pretty early. Bob, how about you?
Yep. We sold one or two yesterday. You know, the majority of them don't come in until next week, so we have some, but not by any means the full complement yet. But I think people are out there getting ready a little early because nobody knows what's going to happen here in the next few weeks.
Well, you make a point. This email came in quite a while ago from James in Smallwood, New York. He writes, "Could you please inform how and when to fertilize two young trees I have growing in mulched beds at my home? What kind of fertilizer should I use to encourage wintertime root growth? When should I apply it? And should I give a second dose of the same fertilizer in the early spring?" So several questions there. Let's throw it first to Greg.
Sure. You know, it'd always be good to know exactly which tree, but generally speaking, the you know, most garden fertilizers would be more than adequate. So something you already has that might say trees or shrubs. It might even say tomatoes, and that wouldn't be the end of the world. You could use that. And you would simply, you know, read the bag, try to, you know, figure out the approximate volume of the area you're feeding so that you use the appropriate amount. And just as Bob said, you know, people are still planting, the weather's still good. Adding that today would actually be still beneficial. I'm sure some of that product would be activated and begin to be absorbed. I do think that, and Bob, you tell me what you think, but if you're adding it today, you probably don't need to do it a second time until, say, June, that you would not need an early spring application as well.
Right. There's a misconception with fertilizers that it doesn't matter so much what you use, but that you do something, as Greg said. I mean, you could even use tomato food. But I think both of us would recommend you use a, you know, an organic, a slow release, typically not a 5-10-5 or a 10-10-10 or something like that, because that release is pretty quick. But fertilizer that's applied when the temperature is cold, and the temperature is what makes the difference here. When the temperature gets down low, it's utilized for root growth. If it's applied earlier, when it's warm, it's not utilized for root growth. So it doesn't matter whether it says winterizer on it or anything else. It's when you apply it, not what you apply. At the same time, we'd recommend a slow release of some sort.
Yeah, and most of those fertilizers, as Bob mentioned, most of those fertilizers that are available today that you would shop for are probably organic fertilizers. Slow release is part of that. But I think this, we're having this warm fall. I think it's actually a really good time to still do that.
All right. This one from Ann and Adams, and just a side note here. One of the terrors I have as a host is having to pronounce things that are in foreign languages that I have no idea. It often happens on Medical Monday, and frequently it happens on this program as well. Here's one from Ann and Adams, and good luck to me. Ann writes, so excited, the gardening show is on. I've got a question. A friend gave me seeds for the checkered Fritillaria liliae. Is it best? I don't know why. I just... Give me the phonetics, Ann. Is it best to plant them in a pot or direct right now? I think they have to stay moist. Need some advice, and that's from our buddy Ann and Adams.
Well, I think we both say it's definitely a bulb you want to plant directly into the ground now. If the intention is to have it in the garden for next year, and that's a fairly large bulb, so. Usually that means that you want at least 4 to 6 inches of good garden soil above the tip of that bulb. So you're probably planting it at 7 or 8 inches down. Nice sunny location obviously is always helpful so that the bulb will do everything it needs to do this spring, but you want it to return and do it for a few years or many years in a row. So a nice sunny location is helpful. If you're going to put it in a container to try and force it, it's not top of the list for an easy forcing bulb. Not that it couldn't happen, but what you would do is basically put it in a pot now and keep that pot in a place that's cold but not necessarily freezing. I always mention the bottom steps of the outside stairwell access to your basement as a good location, but anything that would mimic that would be fine. Keep it moist. For the wintertime and let it root out, and you probably can bring it in about 3 months later, so February, March, and have it forced inside to bloom.
Bob.
Yeah, the thing to recognize, as Greg said here, with these bulbs that are planted in the fall, those roots are grown during the wintertime. You can't plant those in the spring because they need the cold weather to develop the roots. So if you're getting a tulip or a daffodil or a crocus or something for next Easter that's forced into flower at that time, it's actually been in a cooler. We have a giant walk-in cooler where we pot these things up and put them on shelves. Mm. And they stay there till we take them out, you know, again, 2, 3, 4 weeks before we're going to sell them. So they have to be cold during the winter.
One more email here, and then we'll take a break. The phone lines are loaded. If you are calling in for this program, when you hear somebody hang up, that would be a good time to call. We will get to the phones in a moment here. We'll take a quick break. But this email from Brian in Cornwall-on-Hudson. Brian says, I have a very tall blue spruce and a slightly taller cypress right next to it. They're right by the road, and I suspect too close to each other to get sufficient nutrients. Is there anything I can supplement the soil with to nourish them? And that is from Brian in Cornwall-on-Hudson. Bob, I'll go to you first.
Yeah, you know, the concern there is sure you can fertilize them, but the concern there more is if they're close, it's the sun. If they're going to shade each other, that's what's going to cause the problem. The plants can usually be taken care of nutrient-wise by what's in the ground or by supplemental nutrition, but there's no supplementation for the sun. If they're too close, part of those plants are going to die off because they're not getting the sun. So it's probably too big to move. Maybe they can be trimmed a little bit, but sure, you can fertilize them. It's not going to hurt.
All right, great.
And I would just say, yeah, I mean, when you landscape, you know, it's not always about having these individual specimens that you know, that are not touching, that are, you know, individual sort of lone soldiers. Merging things is part of that, and it does create maybe a limited life, but there's nothing wrong with that. So keeping that in mind, and maybe just making sure that if they are competing for space, they're probably also competing for some water and to irrigate them on occasion.
Okay, let's take a quick break here. The phone lines, as I mentioned, fully loaded, and we'll get to them in a moment. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. The phone calls, you and the gardeners next. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's gardening today, and it's always fun to have Greg and Bob to answer your gardening questions. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll kick it off with Juan in Kingston. Juan, you're up.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Good.
Great.
Good. My question is, I have a volunteer from my mom's sugar magnolia, which is an heirloom tree we've had forever and ever and ever. And it started sending up some runners, and she gave me one, and I cut it out about a few months ago, and I've had it in a bucket to grow some roots. And now it's gone dormant, and I'm trying to figure out if I should plant it or if I should just let it sit and plant it in the spring.
Well, I think we're going to agree on this one, Greg, that if you can, it'd probably be good to get it in the ground. The concern is with a small plant like that, if it's going to get physically damaged by something hitting it or deer or rabbits or something, then you could keep it in a container. But if it's in a container, it's going to have to be somewhere where it's cold, but not just outside. Right, Greg?
Yeah, it's a tricky situation when you have this young plant that may not be completely rooted in the, we assume, soil that you have in the bucket or the container. So you would want, if you're going to plant it, you'd want to gently slide it out and ideally not have it become bare rooted again, as they say, without any soil on it before you put it back in the ground. It's especially magnolias are a little sensitive to that in the fall. So if it's all rooted and you can easily slide it out and plant it in a location, then as Bob said, just be concerned with winter browse of deer or some other, you know, vole type, you know, smaller rodents. And then if you're not going to, if you want to chicken out and wait till spring, then putting it, I always say put it in the north side of your house or your garage, and then maybe put a bag of mulch. Keep the mulch in the bag necessarily, but kind of wrap the bucket in that so that it stays frozen. It doesn't heat up and cool down.
Okay, so it is okay to let it freeze then.
Yes, it's going to freeze regardless of whether you plant it or not. It's about keeping, because it's now above ground, you're trying to keep it from changing temperature.
Right.
Okay, Juan, thank you so much for the call. And over to Plainfield, Massachusetts, our buddy Kerry. Kerry, you're on.
Hi, guys. I got a quick question today. Usually I plant my garlic in the middle of October, but I had some health issues this year and kind of put me out of service. So I haven't planted any garlic yet, and I was just wondering, you know, it's pretty cold up here on the mountain where I live, and I got about a 1-inch thick frozen soil. If I were to pull up that soil and get where the ground's workable, the soil's workable, is it still too late to plant the garlic, do you think?
No. Short answer is definitely not. What town are you in?
Plainfield.
Plainfield. I live up in Plainfield.
It's going to, you know, I think by the weekend that 1-inch frost is going to be gone because we are going to have a nice warm-up. So you may want to just wait until Saturday or Sunday because I think it'll be looser, especially midday. And then definitely plant it. And when you're done planting, you do this normally already, but go over it with some little bit of mulching material, a little straw, a little compost is actually ideal if you can top dress the whole thing with an inch and a half compost, and then they'll be fine.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks a lot.
Carrie, thanks a lot for the call. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery is here. Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery. And the number is 800-348-2551 if you have a gardening question. Let's go to Merle in Argyle. Merle, you're on.
Hello. Hello. Ray, you need to turn up your volume a little bit.
Me? Okay. All right. Or I'll speak louder, too. Hello.
Okay. You can do
Okay. We're ready.
Okay. The question is green potatoes. I was out picking tomatoes, and I picked up a green potato that was on the ground. Huh. Are they edible? My book says no.
I've heard that it's not a good idea to eat the green part of the tomato, or the potato, excuse me. I have no idea why anymore. I can't remember what the reason is. But it's there's some compound in there that it's not, not recommended to eat. That said, I personally have eaten a few greenish potatoes before because I was hungry. So I'm still feeling pretty good.
She also got a bunch of regular brown potatoes from free from the library, and they sort of turned green.
So the green happens because they're getting too much sun. So that one, those ones that were laying around in the garden, were exposed to the sun, and that's why they turn green. And that's why it's recommended you harvest your potatoes and then you put them in the basement or some dark location so that they don't turn green.
Well, that's an interesting one. Merle, thank you for that. You want to add anything, Bob?
No, just that's exactly right. It's starting to actually think it's a growing plant. It's turning green because it's getting sunlight. So that's the reason for avoiding that. Yep.
All right. I've never heard that before. We go to Barbara in Clifton Park. Barbara.
Hey, Ray.
Hey.
And guests, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm calling about my kale. It's the first year that I have grown kale. The plants are still in the ground, and I just harvested some 2 days ago. Of course, it was all frozen, but it was still good, and then the salad turned out great. So my question is, the plants are right near the garage, so right next to the house, and they're in full sun. Any chance that those plants will winter over?
Depends on the winter.
What the winter does, right? Yeah. Typically not, but it depends on how mild the winter is and whether you protect them. I've seen them survive the winter, but, Clifton Park is just a few miles north of where we are here, and the weather's just so variable. Maybe we don't get much below 10 degrees, but maybe we go to 20 below. You just don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you wanted to preserve them a little longer run, you could consider tenting them, or tending them just on cold nights. But soon that might be all the time, and that would certainly get them farther into the winter.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Barbara, thank you very much. Greg Ward joins us from Ward's Nursery at Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery. It's Gardening Today, 800-348-2551. The number... that's my fault, Zach, the engineer. Don't yell at me. It's Diana and Rhinebeck. Diana, you're on. Hi. How are you? Hello? Diana? Hello? Hello? Goodbye. Let's see. Richard and Hannah Croy. Richard.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
I've got a question about about composting. I'm aware the nitrogen level needs to be high, so I've been keeping green as long as I can in it, probably about 70 to 80%. I'm getting a lot of carbon from pine shavings that have been doused in horse excrements.
Right.
And just wanted to know whether I think the amount of carbon that I've been getting in has exceeded the amount that you want to keep the heat up in the pile. Is there anything that I can do aside of adding more urea from the horse. And I don't know how to compensate.
Well, any,
I'm afraid, you know, that,
yeah, basically composting, you know, you're getting cellulose and you're getting nitrogen in there, and you could add some organic fertilizer of some sort. You could add some manure of some sort. You know, you need a nitrogen source. Most of the time, that's grass clippings that people put in it during the summer, and you don't get that now. But if you've got, I've got horses, and I use shavings too. You know, those get pretty well soaked in urine, and you may be getting more nitrogen than you think from that.
Mm.
And it's getting cold now, so
go ahead, Greg.
Yes.
Well, just the process, what you're trying to accomplish may not be able to really finish the process until mid or late spring. Depends on, of course, whether you have it covered and whatnot. But it's getting cold now, so it's going to slow down.
So it is a good idea to cover during the winter, eh? I'm not from this.
Anything to keep the heat up. Yeah.
Okay, Richard, where are you from?
Okay, great.
Where are you from, Richard?
Hanacroy.
Oh, okay.
Originally Canada, but I grew up in Florida.
Oh.
So I've been in the military.
Gotcha. Well, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. And now let's go to the elusive Diana in Rhinebeck. Diana, you're on. Or not.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much.
Go ahead.
Appreciate it. I have a couple of problems because we're doing some construction in the front of the house. So we moved the sidewalk. There's a lot of shrubs there. I've got two holly bushes that I have to move, or I guess I could leave them, but then we'll have to move them and they won't be able to finish the landscaping around the new path. But I understand it's not good to move them this late in the year, that early fall is better.
Yeah. Whereabouts are you located? What city?
I'm in Rhinebeck.
Rhinebeck.
Rhinebeck. So you're a little south of
Rhinebeck,
us.
Rhinebeck,
yeah.
New York.
Yeah.
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 I don't know, Greg. I'd be
in a little bit of a cold spot.
You're in a cold spot in Rhinebeck. Okay.
I'd be inclined to go ahead and move them, Greg, wouldn't you? And
I
get
would.
It done. Yeah. And then wrap them with some burlap, make sure they're well hydrated, well watered, maybe a little wilt proof or something on it like that. But I think I'd go ahead and do it.
Yeah, and you could be in a cold spot in Rhinebeck, but that's not cold compared to, you know, the Berkshires or a lot of other, you know, places as you toward the, you know, the Catskills and whatnot. So I think you're in a pretty safe location as well.
Diana.
Okay, but wrap them in burlap because I was just going to transplant them where they're going.
Yeah, well, you plant them, but then wrap the tops in burlap. Tie them up with some string. What burlap does is it keeps the sun and wind off of them. You're going to disturb some roots. You're going to lose some roots. It's going to have less capacity to regenerate its moisture loss. So if you put something around the top, that cuts down on the sun and wind and cuts down moisture loss. I'm not talking about the roots.
Great.
I'm talking about
the
top.
That's great.
All right. Well, Diana, thank you. I'm glad you made it through. 800-348-2551 is our number. Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, and Joan is in Schenectady. Hello, Joan.
Hello, all y'all.
Hi.
Good to be talking with you today.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you. This year, I'm already starting to dream about next year's garden. I have a young garden, only about 2 years old, nice vegetable patch, and I took some damage to the trees in that horrible windstorm back in October, and I realized it took off enough of the canopy of the trees, I'll be dealing with a much sunnier garden next year than I've dealt with. So my question is mostly about the greens I like to eat, like spinach and then escarole and then Swiss chard.
Mm.
Can you give me some advice on stuff that might grow that I didn't even bother with because it was pretty shady patch?
Yeah.
So all edibles, you're talking for a vegetable garden?
Yes, this is a vegetable garden, yes. It does really well for the herbs, for beans and peas, okra. And now I want to know, what can I do now that it's going to be a little sunnier next year?
Should be better, right, Greg?
Yeah, it should be much better.
Yeah.
Everything should perform well. One of the things that you probably are going to notice is that all of those things that are doing well for you or did well for you this year, part of the reason they did well was because it was a little bit cooler for those second crops in June, July when it gets hot. You know, the shade is actually helping them out a little bit, and that may not be the case. So you may be finding a different spot for your second or third crop of spinach or lettuce. But short of that, everything else is really loving the sun. And so doing a second crop of broccoli or beans is going to be easier this time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
Yeah, when you think about
to get a second crop this year easy.
When you think about it, farmers don't farm in the shade. Doesn't happen. They're all in the sun.
All right.
Right.
Joan, thank you.
So now I don't do a lot of greens. So when does one plant the hardier ones, like the escarole, the Swiss chard?
Well, it depends on cedar plants. So if you have starts, usually not before that first of May for some of those cool-tolerant ones. And then if you're planting seeds, though, you know, you can be putting them in anytime, and the ground is workable, and they'll come up when they can come up in the spring. So it really does depend. And then certainly any time after that. Consider some garlic if you still can find some somewhere.
Because
you could plant that today, and it would be pretty happy for the winter.
Well, Joan, thank you very much for the call. It's The Gardening Show today on Vox Pop, and our number is 800-348-2551. Chris in Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, Greg, I got a question, a couple of questions. First of all, I have two crabberry trees in my backyard, and wondering if you could eat those or not, because I see squirrels eating them. My other two questions are, can lemons and limes grow up here as well as papaya?
Those are great questions. So crab apples are edible. There are actually some varieties that are grown specifically to make jams, certain name varieties. But you could make a jam or something similar with any crab apple. Some of the newer selections that we really like have a very small berry, and we like them because the berries don't fall off and they're pretty, and that's going to be a little more trickier to make something with because it's, you know, they're the size of a blueberry, but you certainly can still do it with them. So yes, very edible. Limes and lemons, you can grow them here, but you have to bring them inside. all the citrus, limes, lemons, calamundins, kumquats, even oranges and grapefruits can be grown in your house pretty easily, and people do that pretty frequently these days. Yeah, go ahead.
The difficulty with that is they're full sun plants. You know, they grow outside in Florida and in the tropics, and up here this time of year, even if you have a really, really, really sunny window, it's not a really, really sunny window in the wintertime in the Northeast because it's cloudy most of the time. And the days are short. So the point is, it's got to be in a very bright window because in the wintertime, it's not very bright. And so they're a little tough to get through the winter unless you got a lot of light.
What about a coconut tree in my backyard? What do you think, boys?
Nope.
No?
They freeze, they die.
All right. One email here, and then we'll take a break. This one is from Joseph. What's the best cover crop for a raised bed? Is it too late?
Oh.
I think it's probably too late to get anything to germinate now. So, and if it's a raised bed, you want to probably be able to get in there, first thing in the spring, and then the cover crop will get in your way when it germinates in the spring. So, I would opt to compost, just again another layer of compost over the garden for the winter time. That would be plenty.
Okay.
You know, what we do for cover crops around here is usually a winter rye. I mean, there's a bunch of different things you can use, but as Greg says, it's getting too late for that.
Tell you what, let's take a quick break here. It's The Gardening Show with Greg Ward at Bob Graves, and we'll go through a few emails and then back to the phones for the home stretch. 800-348-2551 is our number. Thank you. Fox Pop, Gardening Today, 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Greg Ward and Bob Graves join us, and we'll go through maybe a third of the emails we have here. This one's from Rob. Rob says, could the gentleman speak to keeping busy during the winter, for example, the recent popularity of growing succulents, or how to grow greens using hydroponics? And that's from Rob.
Well, you know, certainly succulents are a great big deal now. There's a whole lot of things going on with that. And again, my advice to that is, as it was previously for the citruses, they need some sun. They're desert plants. They want it hot, and they want some sunlight. So if you don't have a sunny spot or supplemental lighting, they're not going to do much in the wintertime.
Yeah, and that's sort of, if you don't mind, lets me segue a little bit into what's out there. We usually do classes in the late fall and then winter. You know, we might, in normal March, late February, we might have 45, 50 people, but that's not going to happen, of course. So we've just started to do, we've taken our tip sheets of describing how to make a terrarium, a little indoor terrarium, and we turned them into a short video that's on our website. And so it's not a full class, but it kind of gets you going in the right direction. And we're going to continue to do that throughout the winter. So I think that's the kind of thing I think that you could look for to sort of keep yourself motivated.
That's very cool. What's the website?
Oh, yeah, wardsnursery.com.
Very nice. This email from Pamela in Troy. Pamela says, had a bunch of things moved around in the yard this year. A new street tree, shadblow, a.k.a. serviceberry, a.k.a. Amelanchier canadensis, was planted out front in October. Should I still be watering it, and how much? I also moved my azalea in the backyard, and it had looked pretty good. I noticed the other day it has brown leaves. What should I be doing about it? And that's from Pamela in Troy.
Well, it's certainly, you know, if the hard part about watering now is if you've turned your outside faucets off, it's kind of hard to do. You can take some buckets. But, you know, if we have adequate rain and the ground is moist, which it probably is now, it's okay. But if it doesn't freeze up for weeks and we don't get any more rain, sure, yeah, I'd water them. On the azalea, you know, if you're a little concerned about it, again, wrap it with some burlap, protect it a little bit from the sun and the wind.
Greg.
Yeah, I think on the azalea, a lot of things got kind of caught off guard with those last few cold snaps, and the leaves maybe weren't turning, you know, especially an azalea that's a little shelter, weren't turning color yet, and they were still a little green, and then that frost said, forget it, we're not going to let you turn green. That freeze, it just burned them up. So that's probably not a problem. Just, you know, touching the buds that are underneath the leaves or above the leaves and making sure they're firm is probably all you need to do to make sure it's alive. And then watering, what Bob said, we're kind of over-watering finally as of, you know, these last couple of weeks, but it could return. If we get into some dry weather in December here, warm weather, it wouldn't hurt to water it again at least once.
Okay, two more. You know, go ahead, Bob.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, we've seen some trees do weird things, plants do weird things, because we had that one night when it went down below 20 or around 20 way quickly, and things just did weird things. The leaves didn't turn the way they normally do. Yep.
Two more emails, and then back to the phones we go. This one's from Barbara in Dutchess County. Barbara writes, we have a well-established bed of red raspberries. Some plants are expanding beyond the area of the bed and encroaching on pathways. Can we transplant the out-of-range plants into a gap in the middle of the bed? When's the right time to do this? Same question for asparagus, where we also have recently begun to contend with common asparagus beetles. And that's from Barbara in Dutchess County.
Well, yeah, certainly they can move the raspberries, right, Greg?
Yeah, but I'd say they can move both, and they probably could do it now if they had the energy. Or spring. You could wait till spring and do it in April, but why not do it now?
What about the asparagus?
Either one, I'm saying.
It's a lot. Sometimes it's really nice to do it now if we get a mild December, because you always have more to do in the spring than you can handle, and you don't get to it. So if you got the opportunity now, boy, do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we if you look, this next week, you know, every day I look at the weather, and sometimes three times a day. And next week looks great. Looks great for us.
John writes, John is in the Berkshires, and he writes, a massive old birch tree in my yard has 9 main trunks growing high above its base. Two pairs of birch saplings have been growing out of the ground right along the base and are now over 8 feet tall. Should the saplings be cut down? If not, why not? If so, what time of year? And that's from John in the Berkshires.
That's tricky. First thing I thought of is that it's this huge birch tree, and they are not technically or considered long-lived, and so how much more time will it be there? And if it's not going to be there for the next 25 or 30 years, then maybe these younger ones will actually help replace it, or partially anyway.
Okay.
And if it is there that long, they're not going to do very well anyway, because they're going to be shaded out by the larger tree. So almost kind of wait and see a little bit.
I defer. Yeah, we're deferring.
All right. We'll punt on that. Mark in Glenville. Mark, you're on.
Yeah, actually, I'm calling about a half an acre of lawn up in Perth, Fulton County. It's my mom's property. I take care of it every week. I've got no problems on it. It's a square piece of property, one 80-foot tall maple tree, and a storage shed for the farm equipment. But I got a problem. A couple of years ago, started seeing grubs on the lawn. Didn't think much of it. But now I got molds everywhere. Do I kill the grubs first to get the moles, or do I kill the moles first, or the grubs to attract the moles?
Well, a couple things you got to realize. The primary food source of moles is not grubs, it's earthworms. You may have a whole bunch of grubs, and the moles are going to eat them, but that doesn't necessarily get rid of the moles, because if it's nice ground, it's going to have a lot of earthworms, and that's what they're after. So sure, you can treat for the grubs, but that's not necessarily going to solve your problem if you're primarily concerned about the moles. But that's up to you as to which way you want to go. And I'd go out there and really start poking around to see how many grubs you have. If you don't have 5 or 7 or 10 per square foot, you don't have a problem.
Yeah, and how does the lawn look? How did it look as we came into fall?
The lawn is cut to about 3 inches high. It's very thick and green. I keep it meticulous. But the problem is I got these moles.
Well, that's what I'm getting at is the grubs probably are – certainly the grubs are everywhere, but they're probably not the problem, as Bob said. If your lawn got through this drought year and into the fall looking strong, I would say it's probably doing fine. But to check it again as you get into spring.
The grubs eat the roots, and if they were really doing a number on it, it'd be dead. It wouldn't look nice and green.
Right.
Well, I got to get rid of those moles, though. That's the problem.
Trap
them or repel them or
I'd if they would follow me off the property. I wouldn't care. Just don't know how to do it.
Yeah, Greg.
I would just add to it that trapping them. There's a whole science behind that, and you can find all that information online if you want. But you're setting the traps in particular locations, and it's monotonous. I don't know that you're going to really have fun, but you could certainly try that route. Just simply spending some time on the lawn, before the ground freezes up with your mower still or whatever, that they don't like the traffic that's happening on the lawn. Once you stop spending time on the lawn, then they tend to move in more rapidly. So you could keep that in mind.
Fair enough. Mark, thanks for the call. Now to Kim in Gansevoort. Kim.
Hi, gentlemen.
Hi.
I have recently rescued from a garden center blue girl hollies. And they're the small black pots, the 1 gallon size. And so they've been outside through the very cold that we've had in the past couple of weeks. Can I put them in the ground still as it's warm this weekend? And if not, how can I winter them, or should I just give up?
No, I'd get them in the ground, wouldn't you, Greg? Plant them now. But you may need to protect them with a little fence or wire or something, again, to keep the animals off of them.
We're still planting, and we do recommend, for blue hollies, a lot of the broad-leafed evergreens, which blue hollies are in that group, for us, we like to suggest that they don't see a lot of southern exposure, especially winter southern exposure, that they're planted, that we always say the east side of your house or some outbuilding is ideal for those plants, rhododendron and blue holly in particular. But any other location is going to be fine as long as it's a fairly, you know, narrow window for southern exposure and or a lot of open windy areas. So up, you know, up against some foundation somewhere. And I would do that now. And as Bob said, you know, if you still want to do the burlap wrap afterwards, that will, you know, keep them a little more hydrated and they should be fine.
Kim, thank you very much. To Hartford and JJ, you're on.
Good afternoon. Is this the Santa call-in show?
Yes, it is. You've been very bad, and you're not getting any presents. Ho, ho, ho.
Tell me something I don't know already.
All right, very good. Go ahead.
A question on Christmas plants, actually. Poinsettia is the care and nurturing of them, number one. And number two, is it possible in these northern latitudes to transplant them?
Transplant them from where to where?
Well, from the pot that I bought them in into the ground.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, you know, no.
Well, I will say that I have kept them in pots, and I know people who have inserted them in the pot in the ground during the summer months.
Right, to
make it easier to take care of them so they could sort of ignore them a little bit and then lift them, pot and all, in early September and bring them in.
Now, the trick to getting them
too
to flower,
work.
You
too
probably...
Too much work.
You probably
now
know
you're really getting no presents.
To get them to flower, they have to have natural day length in the fall. That is, when the sun goes down, they're in the dark, and when the sun comes up, they're in the light. So if you've got one that you've kept from year to year, you've got to put it in a room where it doesn't get natural light at night in the fall, or else it'll never flower.
Yeah. And what is it, 8 weeks?
I've been spoiled because we live in Mexico half the year, and we do it all the time, but... We're sort of sheltering in place up here in Connecticut, so we've been spoiled.
Yeah.
But seriously, how much watering for the poinsettia?
Well,
they don't like to get dry. They don't want to be constantly soaked either.
Yeah, it's a nice, happy balance. In the house, I tend to like to run them slightly dry if you know, to get a little fanatical about it. The plant has those nice leaves, not just the colored bracts on top of the other leaves, and you don't really want them to wilt. But you also want the pot, when you lift the plant off the table, you want it to be fairly light. You don't want it to have a lot of weight. And you can also kind of do the thumb test, stick your thumb in the soil and see if you feel moisture. But the weight test, I think, is ideal. So you bring it home, you water it well, you pick it up, you get a sense of it. And then maybe 5 days later, you pick it up and you go, well, it's kind of light. Maybe I'll add some water. But you just don't want to get it to that point where the leaves are wilting. It can happen once, maybe even twice, but it will start to drop leaves if you do that.
Yeah, Greg's right. The absolute
you guys are great. Thanks very much.
Go ahead.
Best way to determine whether it needs to be watered is to check the weight, lift it up.
All right. Hey, JJ, good luck. A, with Santa Claus. B, escaping to Mexico. We appreciate the call. And now let's go to Melissa in Great Barrington. Melissa.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about worms. Someone mentioned earthworms a little earlier.
Yeah.
I have two gardens. One is was an unused rock garden that I'm trying to bring back to life. It's clay soil, overgrown with vinca and bittersweet and old irises and daylilies. And I've finally dug all that up. And I'm finding lots of worms. My vegetable garden, which has not been ignored, and then I replenish it in the spring when I'm planting with compost, and in the fall I turn under all the veggie plants, and you know, I keep the nutrients going. No worms. So what do worms like? I mean, or can I move worms from one place to the other?
What do worms like, boys? What do you think?
Well, I would say that it's okay not to have worms to notice significant worms in your vegetable garden. There's, because you're being active in there, you know, the plants are taking everything that is, you know, coming, that you're adding to the garden on a regular basis. It's intensive growing in that situation. And the worms, you know, are really not able to find enough to eat. And in that garden that you, you know, ignored for a long time, you know, they had sort of settled in. It was where they were, and it had that, even though it might have been, you know, not anything exciting, that top layer of plant material and duff underneath it, you know, the detritus from the old plants, was exactly what they wanted. So I think once you make that garden active again, you probably will have less worms, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
I don't need to have worms in my veggie garden to keep things aerated, or, I mean, it's not, you know, you don't have to have worms. Okay.
As Greg says, you're doing a lot of cultivating there. What worms like to do is produce compost. You know, that looks like stuff that's maybe not quite fully decomposed yet.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. So, you know, if you wanted to put some stuff in there that was a little less decomposed, but again, you don't really need them. You could put some in there, though, if you wanted to. It wouldn't hurt, but they may not stay.
All right. Melissa, thank you so much for the call. We only have about, 95 seconds or so, and that's usually trouble because our last caller usually does a four-minute preamble. But let's find out if Jennifer in Poughkeepsie can keep it brief. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello, Ray. Thanks for taking my call. It will be brief. I had a comment on the green potatoes.
Ah.
So one green potato, I'm sure, would be fine. The green, when the potato is exposed to sunlight, besides the chlorophyll being activated and turning the skin green, there's another toxic compound, which is why potatoes are in this, like, Solanaceae nightshade family.
Yeah.
However, just one potato is not going to induce sickness. Do not eat many green potatoes. That could be an issue. And I think it would be okay if he just peeled the skin off, so he was consuming the inner part of the tuber and not the skin itself. But I'd have to refresh my memory on that last bit.
My God, Jennifer, that was both brief and extremely informative. I'm going to have to send you some kind of a prize. Well done.
Thanks.
Great. Thank I'll take a green potato.
All right, done. Sold. Hey, thanks for the call. Bob Graves, how do people find Fatigans on the web?
Fatigans.com. We're there.
All right, man. We'll talk to you. If I don't talk to you before the holidays, have a very good one. Greg Ward, how do people find Ward's?
Yes, indeed. Wardsnursery.com, Great Barrington, Massachusetts.
All right, and I'm sorry that Santa will not be there. But we know JJ's on the bad list. We have a list. We're checking it twice. Hey, guys, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Roy.
Support comes from Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. And the Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio, presenting the Open for Takeout virtual concert series Monday, November 23rd at 8 p.m., featuring Albany-based rock outfit Yeah Universe, thelinda.org for details. Well, once again, thanks to Bob Graves and Greg Ward for being here on The Gardening Show. Thank you for listening. As always, the phone line's completely jammed. And you know what? We'll do it again next month. Ordinarily, we take a couple months off in the winter from The Gardening Show, but these guys, they're pretty darn popular, so we'll do it again next month. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Matthew Plummer took the calls. Our producers, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we welcome back a Food Friday Hall of Famer, Deanna Fox, to talk about Thanksgiving prep. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.